This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. On July 24th, 1915, at approximately 7:15 a.m., the SS Eastland, a tour ship in Chicago, started to list and sway from side to side, ultimately turning over on its side. 844 people were killed from drowning or trampling. George Halas, Papa Bear himself, the founder of the Chicago Bears, and a huge reason for the existence of the NFL, was supposed to be on this boat. But for his sake, and perhaps even the NFL's, he showed up late that day. An event that we're surely glad he missed. However, this week's guest missed a huge event himself that was one of the most iconic in sports history. And I was thinking, maybe I should borrow him the keys to my DeLorean so he can go back to Boston. Welcome to Fantasy Football Origin Stories, where each episode is a journey back in time to explore the unique experiences of some of the coolest and most influential people in the fantasy football industry. I'm your host, Arnie Chapman, also known as the Football History Dude. Now, I love fantasy football, and I want you to come along with me to explore the yesteryear of the armchair gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour. Great Scott. This time to stop up the DeLorean, the date is September 11th, 1918, and we're at Fenway Park. We're here to witness the closing of the final game of the 1918 World Series. The last time the Sox would win one for over eight decades. Why are we here? Why a baseball stadium on a Fantasy Football Origin Stories podcast? Well, first off, even though this is based on fantasy football, we are part of the Sports History Network, the headquarters for sports yesteryear, and sports history is our first thing on our minds, no matter what the sport is. And you have to admire the history of that ballpark, even if you're not a baseball fan. Now hold your horses here. We'll get to that soon enough in the interview. All I can say is, it kind of revolves around the Red Sox, and a long await, but then missing out on an opportunity of a lifetime. More on that in a minute from this week's guest, Andrew Seifter, from Rest of Season Rankings, which you can find over at rosrankings.com. And speaking of the site, here's his bio from rosrankings.com. Andrew Seifter is a featured writer for Fantasy Pros, covering fantasy baseball and fantasy football, and a member of the Fantasy Sports Writers Association. Previously, he was a featured columnist for Bleacher Report, where he wrote baseball columns that won editors' awards and were picked up by San Francisco Chronicle and Philadelphia Inquirer. He's been a regular guest on ESPN Radio's Between the Lines with Scott Galletti and Chris Williams, appeared on Fantasy Pros Podcast, and... wait a second, this is the part about the teaser, you know, from the beginning of it, so we'll talk about that later in the episode. Carrying on to the rest of it, it goes, according to Fantasy Pros Accuracy Rankings, Andrew is the 18th most accurate fantasy baseball writer in the industry over the last 3 years, and was the number one accurate ranker of kickers, and number eight most accurate ranker of running backs during the 2021 fantasy football season. And now Andrew has taken all of this fame and glory and decided to reach the pinnacle of his fantasy analyst career by talking to yours truly on Fantasy Football Origin Stories. We'll get into that in a minute, but first, I gotta ask you for a quick little favor. If you enjoy the show, please rate and review us. Maybe go throw it out on the app of your choice. Give us some feedback, that way I know where I can improve and what you might like to see coming up on future episodes. And I also heard it kind of helps out with this whole algorithm thing, so maybe it puts us to the top of the list so people can find us better. But other than that, let's just get into the fantasy football origin story of Andrew Seifter. Speaking of that, actually, I have the DeLorean right here. You're going to be riding in this baby later on. We'll crank it up to 88 miles an hour and everything. But yeah, that's the premise of my original show, The Football History Dude, was we go in the DeLorean, go learn about some history of the gridiron. A lot of people think, you know, depending on what generation, it's like, oh, the NFL basically started when free agency started, or like the AFL-NFL merger. And it's like, well, there's like a whole half a century or more before that kind of thing, especially if you look before the NFL. But, let's start there. NFL, where do your loyalties lie?
Yeah, well, so that's going to be a little controversial because I did grow up in Boston, but all my cousins are older than me, and they kind of brainwashed me when I was about 5 years old to become a Cleveland Browns fan.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know. I could have been a Patriots fan. And in fact, I went to the University of Michigan for college at the same time as Tom Brady. So I have like extra reason to have been a Patriots fan. And I do like the Patriots as well. And, you know, I know a lot of people don't like the Patriots. I'm never going to be one of those people. But the Browns are the team that I've kind of, you know, from that young age lived and died with. The first football game that I ever attended actually was the 1986 playoff game between the Browns and the Jets. It used to be on one of those video, you know, they would have those VHS tapes that were like, you know, the 10 greatest comebacks in football history and things like that. That was one of those games because the Browns were, and remember, this was in the 80s when teams weren't scoring 40 points a game all the time. The Browns were down 10 points in that game with 4 minutes left in regulation. And the announcers had said it was over, that they were going to lose. And they came back and tied it up and won in double overtime. I was at that game. I was like 6 years old. I had no idea really what was going on, but you know, from that moment on, I think I was sort of, you know, stuck being a Browns fan and having to endure everything that came after that.
Well, I mean, I could understand. I mean, you live through such an exhilarating moment in your, you know, formidable years and everything. I mean, was that the Kozar era or was that a different time?
Yeah. So that season ended after that. I think it was the week after that game was when they lost to John Elway on the drive. Mm-hmm. And then the following season, they lost to John Elway on the fumble, the Ernest Byner fumble. And then, you know, they got to the AFC Championship a third time in 1989 and just got blown out by the Broncos. So three times AFC Championship game with Kosar, couldn't get over the hump, lost to the Broncos all three times. This was the same time that, you know, the Cavaliers were losing to Michael Jordan in the playoffs. It just felt like, you know, it was never going to come. And I know Cleveland sports history changed a little with when LeBron James came to town in basketball, but with the Browns, it's still a process that they're undertaking here because you have to go back to the 1950s and 60s to find the glory days of the Browns.
Hey, you're talking to, I don't know if you can see my shirt here, but so my Lions shirt. And I got my Barry Sanders coaster here, which I show everybody. So, yeah, I have much empathy for you as being a Browns and Lions fans. But, B, the only at least as a Lions fan, I can say our last championship won was against the Browns. So, I guess I got that one on our books.
That's right. The Browns and the Lions were the two best teams in football right before there were Super Bowls. And then minute there were Super Bowls, we never made it.
It's like they both forgot to get the ticket on to hop on the bus or something like that.
Exactly.
So, okay, I don't normally talk about necessarily like players this upcoming season too much as far as like fantasy takes, but considering you're a Browns fan and you do, you know, have some fantasy acumen, that's why you're on the show. Like, are you in on the possible rebirth or are you like the guy that's like, nah, Deshaun is washed or like, where are you falling that kind of chain?
God, man, I have mixed feelings about Deshaun Watson, of course, but
well, yeah.
In terms of like X's and O's on the field, I don't know. I just think about it. It's like last season was you can't read too much into that, you know, because it was just such a weird situation. He had been away from the game for so long and then to just, you know, step in late in the season with, you know, try to win over the locker room in that situation and fit in. It's just a lot to ask. So this year is the real test because this year he's got a normal training camp like everybody else. I mean, I think the Browns are going to be a pretty good team. I don't know if we're going to see vintage Deshaun Watson ever again. I think the jury is very much still out on that. But I do know that the Browns have one of the best running backs in the NFL and Nick Chubb. They've got a great offensive line. I think they have a really underrated defense as well. So I think they're going to be a pretty good team. I just don't know if they're going to be, you know, throwing the ball all over the field, and Deshaun throwing for 350 yards every week or anything like that. I'm not sure that's really in Kevin Stefanski's DNA anyway. So I think they're going to still be a sort of a defense, win it with defense in the running game, and ask Deshaun to make some plays here and there. And then maybe if he starts getting into a comfort zone, then you see them open it up a little more, because they do have some pretty exciting weapons in the passing game if they can just get it going.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens there. They are in a division where they're going to inevitably be away teams in the AFC Championship to the Chiefs again or the Bills, just because they're going to beat each other up and their record is going to be lower. And then they're going to go into Arrowhead or to Ralph's. Oh, actually, is it called Ralph Wilson Stadium? I don't think it's called that anymore. It's something else now, I think.
Yeah, it's probably got some corporate name. I try to zone out the corporate names.
I think Arrowhead probably has a corporate name too, but it's always, that's what's going to be for me, you know, especially being that, you know, the history and everything. Okay, so you alluded to the 80s, mid-80s, as far as like, you know, being able to watch this game live, that was exhilarating. But what about fantasy football, whether it's your first time experiencing it or even playing it?
Yeah, so the first time I played fantasy football was in college, and it was actually the Kurt Warner year. And so what happened was Kurt Warner in week one of that season came out of nowhere and threw for like 300 yards and three touchdowns. And it was my first time doing fantasy football. So I was like, who's this guy? I'm like, this is nothing. Like, that's a total fluke. I'm not going to pick him up. So I didn't pick him up. And then of course the guy in my league who did pick him up cruised to the championship that season. So I learned a very important lesson right away in fantasy football, which is you can't live on your priors. You can't assume that you already know who's good and who's not, because it's the league is chaos and the league is changing all of the time. So you have to be ready to jump on those breakouts, because those are the guys that end up being league winners, whether it's a quarterback or running back or wide receiver. It doesn't matter. There's going to be guys every year that you don't think are going to be there, and they're just going to come out of nowhere and make a difference. So, so I learned that lesson very early on. But I, you know, even well before I played fantasy football, I was always the kind of guy who was like destined to be obsessed with it, because, you know, I just always loved the X's and O's and the strategy, the game management, both as in terms of what the coaches were doing and what the general managers were doing. Like, I was that, you know, armchair quarterback, so to speak, who was breaking down all of my team's moves and being like, they should have signed this guy instead of that guy. Or like, why did they go for it on fourth there? You know, like, just, I'm always thinking about the strategy of the game. So even, you know, back to when I was a kid, I would play like Strat-O-Matic and, you know, games like that. And I actually, my dad invented this game called Dice Baseball, which I played as a kid. And then he kind of passed it on to me and my cousins, and it would be all these, we would have all these made up players in the game, but it was like, you got to be in control. You know, you were the coach. you were deciding what to do in the game, and you were deciding who starts and who's on the bench. You can make trades and all that kind of stuff. I played those video games. Like, I think Baseball Stars for Nintendo is like the first game where you could kind of like, you know, be a GM. And then of course it eventually got to Madden and all those other games where you could manage a team. But like, I just always loved that aspect of the game. So for me, the minute I found out about fantasy sports, I was instantly obsessed with it, because I just I like being able to have it in my own hands, as opposed to having to rely on the pros and hoping that the team you're rooting for makes the right decisions. Because as a Cleveland Browns fan, that didn't happen very often. So, you know, an NFL season when your team is 2-14 really sucks if you don't have fantasy football. So I'm very grateful for fantasy football in that respect.
Yeah, you're talking to, again, the 0-16 guy over here. So it's like, I think maybe that is one reason why my family latched onto fantasy football so much. You didn't have too much success on the gridiron. You just gave me my, it's a cheater moment, because one of the questions is a mulligan. But so let's go back to the actual players over the course of time. You kind of alluded to the fact that, hey, don't rest on your laurels, or rest on your, you know, preconceived notions, whatever it is. That's, by the way, that's one of my biggest things I've had to more recently overcome, because I spent so much time drafting and I'm like known as the draft expert, but then I don't want to ever like take that guy that's going to be the breakout. So I'm trying to change that this year more. what about like who, whether it's your draft style, your favorite style, or like your favorite fantasy player that you kind of like hung on to over the course of the years that you always seem to target?
That's a good question. I'll answer more generally first. I think you made a really important point there, because like, it's not just true in fantasy football. It's true in life. Like, it's the hardest thing to do is admit when you're wrong about something, you know, and it's even harder when you're a fantasy analyst, because then it's like your take is out there in the world, you know, and I see it all the time. People just sort of, they become known, associated with certain players, and it becomes really hard at that point to say, oops, I was wrong, you know, but you got to do it. I think, you've got to constantly, adjust as you go. So, you know, I have a bias, I guess, in football towards, like the bell cow running backs. That's usually where I'm going. You know what I mean? And I historically have played standard leagues, not PPR. I know PPR has kind of taken over. And so now I'm in, I have been in PPR leagues. I'm in half PPR leagues, but I still do sort of have that bias towards the guy I know that's going to get 20 carries every week, you know? And, sometimes I think if there's something that I stick to too long, it's with those guys when they're really not high efficiency backs, you know? Because you can get 20 carries and you can still not do very much if you're on a bad team and you're just not that good yourself, you know? So, I think sometimes maybe that's the area where I was going to mention, like, you know, this year, Nick Chubb is a guy I'm all in on. So maybe I'm doing it again this year. But I feel like he's a guy that, like, we know he's an amazing runner. But I also think with Kareem Hunt gone, like, they could use him more in the passing game. Like, he could just have the best season of his entire career. So I'm out on a little bit of a ledge with Nick Chubb in terms of my rankings, because I see a lot of people having him more as, like, a, you know, early second round kind of a pick. And I think he's like a mid first, if not even a top five guy potentially.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. Cause he does have, you said it earlier, 20 carries, but not efficient, maybe 77 yards. But like, if he gets 20 carries, he's popping off for like $140 or something like that normally. So yeah, I think
absolutely.
Oh, that just, are you paused on me?
Oh yeah. I was disagreeing with, I mean, you're praising Nick Chubb, so I'm going to agree with you.
Okay. So for the listener of the show, we had a technical difficulty, but it doesn't matter because he's going to agree with me if I put the Nick Chubb in the positive light. So we'll just move on to the next. I mean, what I kind of alluded to it earlier, it was the mulligan moment is something that I allowed you to take this DeLorean right here. You're going to, you know, go back in time and it could potentially blow everything up, just like how they came to Biff Towers and everything back when they came into 85 again. But like, we'll give you the opportunity to go back one mulligan on any pick, take, trade, whatever it is that you made over the course of your career.
Man. Well, I kind of mentioned one already with that Kurt Warner thing. Like, I would have definitely picked up Kurt Warner after that first week. That was a huge mistake. And, you know, I think one thing, though, in fantasy football is you can't live in the past. You know, like, this game is supposed to be fun. So, like, I think in the past there were times, especially in keeper and dynasty leagues, it's worse. So here's a good one. In my dynasty league, the first season, I drafted both of the Ravens tight ends that they had drafted that season, Hayden Hurst and Mark Andrews, and they were both rookies, and they spent the first round pick on Hurst, and Andrews they took later, and Andrews was considered more of like the project tight end, and Hurst was the guy who was like supposed to be, you know, ready from day one to produce. So this was my first time doing dynasty. I wasn't thinking long term enough at all, and I decided to just drop Mark Andrews before the season started.
Oh man!
So that was a bad one, because I mean, he's been a top two tight end ever since then. Thankfully, in that league, last season I traded for Travis Kelce, so now I can finally move on. And have a tight end that's even better than Mark Andrews, at least for this season, hopefully. But but my bigger point is don't live in the past. You know, you can get in the DeLorean if you want to go back and like enjoy 1955 or 1985, but don't go back and feel bad about it, because the game's supposed to be fun. Everybody makes mistakes. Like, you know, nobody is even close to perfect in this game. It's so unpredictable. You just always have to be looking forward, and you always have to be thinking, what is the thing I can do right now to make my team better tomorrow? Because, you know, sitting there and hand-wringing about mistakes you made 5 years ago or 5 minutes ago isn't going to do you any good.
That's kind of a good segue into what your site, rest of season rankings and everything like that. So let's do the DeLorean thing again, but this is a different, it's like a timeline, maybe Bill and Ted Excellent Venture style, where you're going to go through, start at the moment where you're like, huh, I might want to start covering fantasy football in some light, all the way until what I'm calling now the pinnacle of your career on fantasy football origin stories.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm a writer professionally. I've always been a writer. So that's something I just am comfortable doing. I've done it in a lot of different contexts. I'm also a researcher. So that's like a strength that I just have to kind of, you know, because there's all these sites now that produce all these blurbs on player breaking news on players and things like that. So much of that is widely available now. But even so, I do my own research too, you know, and I especially when it comes to like, I used to write an article for Fantasy Pros, the running back roundup, you know, and just trying to figure out from week to week how these depth charts at running back are evolving is something that requires a lot of attention to detail. I mean, you look at snap counts, but you also are often reading the tea leaves with what coaches are saying, how they're talking about these players, because opportunity is king when it comes to running backs. So I do a lot of that research myself to try to figure those kind of things out. I love writing, and I love talking too. So podcasts were like always a natural fit for me. I love any sort of opportunity to just talk sports with people, whether it's at a bar or in front of a microphone. It doesn't matter to me. I get a buzz from it every time. So yeah, I mean, you know, I guess it's always been the dream. It's really hard to make it a living in this industry. And, you know, just frankly, one of my weak spots is social media. Like I try to do it, but it doesn't, like, I'm a super social person and I get a huge buzz off of like face-to-face interactions with people and even podcast interactions. Same thing. I really enjoy it. What I don't enjoy as much is like online interactions. I do them because it's an important part of the job, but it doesn't come as natural to me, you know? So I think like that's one thing I could probably step up my game to, you know, create even more opportunities for myself professionally. But like, I have no regrets. Like I wrote for Bleacher Report like way back in the day, well before it had fully blown up and had all these big partnerships that it has now. So I used, you know, back then I did some baseball stuff for them, fantasy related. I did this big study on the Verducci effect, it was called, which is related to whether pitchers end up having Tommy John surgery. And I crunched a bunch of numbers on that. Took a break from fantasy writing for a while after that, and then hopped on with Fantasy Pros in like 2017. And it's just, yeah, I mean, it was just a lot of fun. I wrote a lot of, you know, the recap articles that they featured on their site on Monday mornings, and was up, you know, into the wee hours of the night, Sunday night, just trying to wrap my head around everything that had just gone down, because that's every Sunday in the NFL is just madness, you know? Like I said, I did the running back roundup, and I've done some dynasty content over there recently as well, coming into this last offseason. So it's all been fun, but eventually I wanted to just kind of create my own thing. And I think that's really what brought me to starting Rest of Season Rankings. I created my own website, rosrankings.com, and then started a podcast initially with an old friend of mine, Lauren Auerbach, who has gone on to kind of focus more on baseball stuff. So I got a new host, Bart Wheeler, who I'm with now. And he and I didn't know each other before. We just knew each other on social media, but I reached out to him and now we're really good friends. And it's really fun recording with Bart every week. The value add, I think, is we do rankings on our site every week during the season. We do it for baseball and for football. Value is always changing in this game. So, people are trying to get their wrap their heads around it. And it's like we were talking about before, you know, a player that you didn't think was good in week one, by week four could be a star, you know, or vice versa, a guy you spent a very early draft pick on could just be worthless by midseason, you know? So those are the kind of things that people need guidance on. Sometimes people need to hear it from someone else to act on it themselves. You know, like people might already know that in their heart, but until they see an analyst say what they're already thinking, it kind of like, it gives them the courage to do what they need to do, you know, whether it's making an ad or a drop or whatever the case may be. So I hope our rankings help with that because, like I said, we're updating them every week. So if people are trying to figure out what kind of trades they can make, you can see who I think is more valuable just every single week on our site.
Let's dive into that a little bit more. The actual rankings, maybe also could go like some of the behind the scenes if you want, but like, what's the thought process for, okay, it's week six, there's some bye weeks ahead of me still. So do those players get a little bit of the opposite of a bump. Let me get my dictionary out. But yeah, so they go down the ranks a little bit, or are you not even factoring that in? You're going per game basis.
I mean, I'll factor that in a little bit, but you know, one difference is, so I also do rankings over at Fantasy Pros, and they have their whole expert consensus rankings, and they do things like measure the accuracy of the rankings, which is really cool. They do that for draft rankings. They do that for weekly rankings. I believe they even do it for rest of season rankings, but it's less of a focus there. But like the thing I'm trying to do that's a little different than what I do at Fantasy Pros, like there you're trying to just finish as accurate as you can. So like you're just trying to figure out the order that guys are going to finish at the end of the season. But that doesn't factor in the fact that some players have like a really low ceiling and a high floor, whereas other guys have like a super high ceiling and a super low floor. And generally in fantasy football, I want the guys with the super high ceiling and the super low floor, because if it doesn't pan out, I'll just move on to the next guy. You know what I mean? Like you're trying to win your league. You're not trying to finish sixth in your league, you know? So like the rankings on our site, rosrankings.com, it's a little more focused on like actual value in a vacuum. So it's not just predicting, you know, what's the most likely outcome. It's predicting like who's the most valuable. It's saying who's the most valuable player when you take into account the potential upside that those players have. So for that reason, like the bye week thing is not a major focus, because like if you're playing fantasy football, you're probably playing in a league with playoffs and you want to have the best team in the playoffs, you know? So like a guy that has a bye week, like you can find another guy to play for 1 week. That's not the end of the world. You want the best guys at the end of the season so you can win your league. So that's really more of the priority when it comes to the rankings. Like you're looking at who are the guys that are emerging, like who are guys that are better than like the conventional wisdom has caught up to yet, and like making sure those guys rise up the rankings so people notice that they need to prioritize picking those players up, prioritize trading for those players, because those breakouts are real.
Yeah, so I'm on the website right now too, going, and you know, this is, I'm assuming again, this is because it's before the season starts. This is like for the whole, like what you call your draft rankings. so it is an example. It's cool too, because you have it broken out for the listener of the show. I did it by just your rankings first, and here's Bart. So Travis Kelce, you have as the third best value. He has him as the 11th. So like, it's not just a, hey, we're going to put it up there. We're going to give you the differences, and then we're going to give you like the overall ranking. That's kind of like what the aggregate score between the two of some sorts.
Yep, it is. It just takes each of them 50% and combines it. And, you know, I think that's great, because, you know, some people might trust Bart more than me. I got no problem with that. If, you know, Bart's a great analyst. So if people want to listen to him instead of me, I won't fight you on it, you know? And I'm sure he'd say the same thing about me. So that's some of the most fun stuff we have on the show, on our podcast, is when we disagree about certain players. And we will sometimes do some episodes related to, we'll crunch the data and we'll see who are the guys that we have the biggest discrepancy on in our rankings, and kind of have a debate about it. It's always civil. It's always friendly. Like I said, we're friends on the show. We're not hot take central on rest of season rankings. So it's not really Stephen A. Smith style analysis or anything like that. Skip Bayless, none of that. It's much more analytical and friendly, but we do have differences of opinion, and that's always fun to hash out.
You know, I think it's good to have that on the show where if you get both of them going, yes, man, that's the same thing. But if you have, like you said, going back and forth and you get to hear both sides, the gears start turning, then naturally as a listener, you start putting your biasy towards the one that you kind of feel the same on, and you're like, okay, now I'm going to go with that one. Or if it, even if it's a tiebreaker, like you said, so as I was kind of looking at some of your stuff and the number one rated kicker ranking or whatever. So, okay, maybe I should trust you on kickers and stuff like that, as opposed to like somebody else might be really good at finding the diamond in the rough tight ends and that kind of thing. Bart, let's go with Bart though. Let's give him some love. What's his like fantasy superpower on the show, or whatever you want to call it?
Oh man, Bart's fantasy superpower. I have to pull up our accuracy, but I like, we always compare like how we each did in the accuracy rankings and things like that. Because I believe he's been really good at running backs, the last couple of years. I'll have to like confirm that, but yeah, I mean, Bart's just like, he's just a real smart all around analyst. So like, I think he and I teach each other a lot of things as we're going through. Like he's been really high on James Cook, this whole off season. And now I feel like a lot of other people are talking about James Cook too, but he was like doing it from the beginning. So, that's another one I could be, living in the past on, cause I traded James Cook in our dynasty league. We're in the dynasty league together. I traded James Cook to get Dalvin Cook last season. And now I'm sort of maybe wishing I had his younger brother instead. But yeah, Bart has planted his flag on guys like that. He's lower on Damian Pierce though, and I'm planting my flag on Damian Pierce this season. So, you know, we go back and forth, but I think like generally speaking, we both make good points for the guys that we like, because we're kind of, you know, it's informed by research. So as we make the case to each other, we do often kind of convince each other a little bit, and maybe our ranking differences shrink over time as we hash things out.
Well, I could see that. I mean, even on other shows I listen to where they, it's just funny, you listen to them and they go, well, I guess I'm actively now ranking or moving that person up the ladder or down the ladder just because of like the argument that they heard from the other analyst. You kind of alluded to the whole research. We'll call it research. Like what's your process for even creating your rankings? Like the research that you do, or like if someone was interested themselves, like, oh, I want to try this, even if it's just for fun.
Well, like I said, to me, it all starts with the fact that opportunity is king in fantasy football, especially when it comes to running backs. But even in terms of like tight ends and receivers, I think like you've got to be on the field, you know, you've got to be running routes. So like when I see things like, you know, that Adam Trautman is looking like he's going to be the starting tight end for the Broncos over Greg Dulcich, and that Dulcich is only going to be in like obvious passing situations, I mean, you have to change your rankings to reflect that, you know? So like, I was very excited about Dulcich coming into the off season, but now I have him and Trautman basically back to back. Cause I think, you know, Dulcich is the guy that I like more from a skills perspective. But Trautman looks like the guy that Sean Payton likes more right now, you know? So like, and that matters a lot for tight ends. I mean, you know, they're not always the first look in there's not many tight ends that are the first option in a lot of plays, you know, they're the second, third option. So they got to be on the field for blocking and running plays so they can actually be open in those passing plays, in base sets. And so things like that affect my rankings. I'm looking at depth charts a lot, you know, and like some of the big ranking changes that have happened for me in the last week, for example, have been about who's the number two running back, you know, cause everyone's always looking at the number one running back, but the number two running back is a guy that could explode in value. He's one injury away from being incredibly valuable, you know? So like, I always stock my bench with those backup running backs, but you got to know who it is. You know, the worst thing in the world is when you're holding one of these backup running backs all season and then the starter gets hurt and your guy isn't even the guy that gets the opportunity, you know? So like, I'm always trying to understand that, and my rankings are changing a lot based on that. So, you know, what's going on in Philly right now, I'm keeping a close eye on that backfield. What's, you know, Denver, I think Latavius Murray and Damian Harris are in much more of a battle for that number two job. I'm sorry, Buffalo, not Denver, than most people realize. So like, you know, these are the kind of things that I think you have to pay attention to, because those, that makes 50, 70 spots in ranking difference, whether you're the number two running back or the number three running back.
Yeah. I mean, that's nothing worse than wasting a bench spot on someone that never touches the field kind of thing. Exactly. What about the whole, you talked about Fantasy Pros earlier and kind of like, hey, this is where our rankings were between you and Bart. And if someone was interested in, like, what's the, even the process to try to apply for something like that, or how do you get approached, or how does that go?
Well, I got looped into it because I was writing for Fantasy Pros. So that was kind of like a natural thing to get offered to do. I do think they reach out to writers who produce fantasy content. You know, Bart had his own site that he did for before he joined on with me. So I think maybe based on that, he had done it. But I think you can apply through Fantasy Pros, reach out to them and say that you want to be one of the rankers. But it's always people that actually are fantasy analysts. So it's not based on the, you know, the number of readers you have or anything like that, but it's based on being a person who's constantly putting content out there into the world. So that's how I got looped into it. And yeah, I mean, it's a lot of work, but it is gratifying when you get those things right. And like you mentioned kickers, like a lot of people dismiss kickers completely, but I put a lot of work into my kicker rankings, and that's why I think I've done so well in kicker rankings over the years, because, you know, there's a lot that goes into that. I mean, it's you're looking for kickers who can make long field goals, like 50 plus yard field goals. You're looking at accuracy. You're looking at kickers who kick in favorable offenses. Like, you know, you want kickers on teams that are favored to win by a lot, because they're going to be kicking field goals late in the game when their team is nursing a, you know, a 2-touchdown lead or something like that, you know? And then you have to look at scoring settings. Like I play in the Scott Fish Bowl, and this year in the Scott Fish Bowl, extra points are worth as much as field goals, you know? So like that changes everything for my rankings for that. I mean, now all of a sudden you just want the kickers and the best offenses, which I think is what people generally assume you want anyway. But in a standard league, that's not necessarily the case. You see guys like Carlson with the Raiders, for example, is always one of the best fantasy kickers. And the Raiders are never one of the best offenses, you know, but he's an incredibly accurate kicker. He's got a really strong leg, and he plays on a team that has, you know, had a coaching mindset of attempting a lot of field goals. So you combine all those things, and he's been a top five kicker most seasons. So you can't just say, like, you know, I want Harrison Butker every year just because he's on the Chiefs. You know, he's not going to be the number one kicker, and most likely.
Okay, so you just answered the question about, like, how do you go about ranking kickers and stuff like that. Let's shift back to baseball now. There's a story that I saw in your bio about something to do with the Red Sox and at the stadium and a ticket booth. Let's talk about that and share that story.
Oh, yeah. This is another good story about not living in regret, because I could definitely live in regret on this one. So I after I had gone to college, and then I actually did a master's degree over in England, and then I came back to Boston, and I got a job working in the Red Sox ticket office. And this was in 2003. So I worked the winter in 2003 in Boston, cold, dreary winter, no baseball games to go to. I did get to do some cool things. Like I was at the press conference when they hired Terry Francona as their manager, things like that. You know, I got to eat my lunch in the stadium while they were watering the grass and things like that. And then I was still working there for about the first month of the season. So I got to go to a bunch of games. The rule was when you worked in the ticket office, you could always go to the game after your shift was over. You didn't have a seat. Like you could get a certain, you had an opportunity to buy seats, and they'd give you a couple seats a month or something like that. But you could always do standing room after your shift was over, so you could go watch the game. You know, it's Boston, so there's not a lot of empty seats you can just go sit in without a ticket. It was always full. But like, it was still so much fun to just, you know, get done at like 9 o'clock and just run out the door to go see the final three innings of the game every night and stuff like that. And then you go out to the bars with your friends. It's a pretty nice life when you're 23 years old. So I was living my best life. I also had just had my 5-year high school reunion, and I had reconnected with a friend of mine. And then I had gotten her a job at the ticket office as well. So then she was working with me as well for the Red Sox. And then I just got this job offer in DC, and it was the kind of thing where it was like, this is like a grown-up job. This is like a real person job. Like, the thing I'm doing now is fun, but like, I felt like I felt obligated to take the professional job, you know? So I reluctantly had to leave the Red Sox and move to Washington, where I still live to this day. So I can't regret it too much because, you know, I'm married with a kid now. So it's kind of like my whole life is changed based on that decision. But I did leave the Red Sox in May of 2004, which, as you might remember, was the year that the Red Sox went on to break the curse of the Bambino and an 86-year curse of no World Series and finally win the World Series. And as it turned out, the whole front office was so giddy about winning this World Series that they flew the entire ticket office to St. Louis for the road games of the World Series, so they could all go to the road games of the World Series. And then when the Red Sox won the World Series, they bought $35,000 World Series rings engraved with their names for every paid employee of the entire organization. So my friend, who I got a job at the Red Sox at our 5-year high school reunion, has one of these World Series rings, and I don't. But, you know, I am in the media guide, so I am going to take credit for that. The year the Red Sox won the World Series, I have a copy of it. I am in the media guide. And I'm not a big jewelry guy anyway. You know, I wear my wedding ring, but that's about it. So, you know, who needs a $35,000 World Series ring that's based on one of the most historic events in sports, not just baseball, but in sports history, right? I mean, who needs that?
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, it, like you said, no regrets, but maybe that's when you should take the DeLorean and go back to that moment where you just...
Yeah, that's fair.
Well, speaking of... Okay, before we hop in the DeLorean again and go in the future, we're going to ask you to tell the listener of the show, where can they find your work and if they want to get in touch with you?
Sure. So, you know, as much as I slammed social media before, I am on Twitter, and I'm always happy to answer people's questions there. So it's @Andrew_Seifter. On Twitter. Like I said, the website is rosrankings.com, restofseasonrankings.com. So you can go there and see the rankings as they evolve each and every week during the season. And then the podcast, Rest of Season Rankings podcast. It's on Apple. It's on Spotify. I tweet out the episodes every week too. So if you follow me on Twitter, that's an easy way to know when they're coming, but you know, you can also just hop on and subscribe on Apple or Spotify to the Rest of the Season Rankings podcast.
Perfect. So now let's do that whole DeLorean thing. Like I said, this is the going in the future. How about give us, you could say 5 to 20. Let's not get hung up on the years that we're going to go in the future, but something that you either would like to see happen in the fantasy football industry or something that you maybe predict that's going to be different.
A good question. It's so interesting to see how things are always changing. I mean, like I said, that whole battle about PPR was the thing that changed. And then Superflex, you know, I feel like Superflex is still not like the default setting, and it absolutely should be the default setting. Like, I feel bad for anyone that's playing in single quarterback leagues. You're just missing out on a lot of fun. You know what I mean? Like, I'm in a keeper league, and it's still single quarterback because once you're in a keeper league, it's like impossible to change anything because, you know, whoever's got certain keepers are going to be like, well, I don't have one of the top quarterbacks. I don't want it to be a super flex league now, you know? So that way it's, you're kind of stuck with single quarterback. But in any of those redraft leagues, if you commissioners out there are listening, like, don't wait 5 years for this. Do this right now. Make your league a super flex league because it's like so much more fun. It's the most important position in football, and it should be the most important position in fantasy football too, but it's not in those single quarterback leagues. So that's something I would definitely like to see, is just have super flex be default. I'm never going to be that PPR guy though. I'll tell you, like, I don't think the simple action of catching a ball should get you points, because like guys catch the ball behind the line of scrimmage and they lose yards for their real team and they still get points, you know? And I know it was sort of created to try to even the playing field between running backs and wide receivers, but like, I feel like that already happened because there are so few bell cow running backs now. So like, there aren't that many running backs that outscore wide receivers because they, like, even in standard leagues, you know, even in non-PPR, they don't, because they're not getting that many touches. And like, it's, you're not getting 20, 25 touches a game. Like, you have maybe five guys that will do that. So all the other guys, you know, are in committees. So that to me was the solution. The NFL took care of it themselves. You know, we didn't need to get crazy with the rules and start giving people points for simply catching a pass, even if it's for negative 5 yards.
Well, okay, so that's what we're going to do. You're going to wave your magic wand. It'll be super flex. We're going back to standard. And then when we get to, okay, so this is the part where I want to ask your advice. You've given a lot of advice to the person that's listening for, like, if they want to jump in to do their own rankings or some other things like that. What about leave the listener with some words of wisdom? And I'm trying to think of how to do it for you, because we've already went through the stuff I was going to ask, through the lens of somebody who's in the middle of the season and they're not sure which way to go and how they can use your rankings to maybe advance their team.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think one of the keys in fantasy football is trades. And trades are such an interesting thing because they're not just about knowing when to buy low and knowing when to sell high. They're also about people skills. You know what I mean? Like, you have to know how to convince somebody else of something. And I used to not like making trades because I would always be so afraid of making a mistake, making a trade that I'd live to regret and all that. But it's also frustrating when you're making trades and you don't get any conversation going. You know what I mean? So like, I think it's a skill to learn how to make deals. But once you do, the rankings are going to be your guide. I mean, they're going to tell you, you know, who's ranked ahead of who, and it might be something that is very different than it was at the beginning of the season. And if the person in your league hasn't changed their attitude about that, then they might think that they're getting the better player when they're really not, you know? So, I think it's a really simple way to see valuation, like who do I value more than who, who does Bart value more than who. So that will help you with trades. It will help you with waiver pickups too. I mean, like, you know, you might see a guy crash into the top 100 of my rankings that's like available in 100% of leagues going into that week. You know, it's like, you need to add that guy. You need to prioritize that guy. And like, the higher the upper are in the rankings, that will kind of give you a sense if you play in a fab league, which, by the way, every league should be fab also. I do think that thankfully is more and more the case, but you know, it will give you a sense of how much you should bid to get players. It will give you a sense of when you can drop players, because I think you were mentioning that at the beginning, you know, that you get really into your draft, you feel great about your draft, and then it's hard to let go of a guy that doesn't end up panning out for you, you know, and you have to do that. So, you know, I try to be a little patient. Bart is more patient than me. My rankings are shift more quickly than his. So if you want to be more on the cautious side, maybe you follow his rankings a little more. If you want to be more on the proactive side, maybe you follow mine a little more. But we'll both tell you when it's time to cut bait on a guy. When a guy that – it doesn't matter if you spend a fifth-round pick on a guy. If he's not going to be of any use to you, it's time to move on, you know. So the rankings will show you that as well.
There you go. If you're on Andrew's team, you better put up or shut up, because his rest of season rankings will be the determining factor if you still have a job on his fantasy team this year. Because he'll take that running back. It don't matter if he drafts him in the first round. If you're not performing and you're not ranking at the top for the upcoming year, he's going to trade you away. Speaking of fantasy football team, that is, when this episode releases, we're only 1 week and a day away from my Detroit Lions taking on the Kansas City Chiefs, defending Super Bowl champs, I understand this, for the opening game of the 2023 season. Oh yeah, let's go, baby. To learn more about Andrew's work, head over to rosrankings.com rosrankings.com. Again, that's rosrankings.com. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through. Thank you for listening to this episode of Fantasy Football Origin Stories. To make sure you're the first to get the next episode, please make sure to mash that little subscribe or follow button on your podcast player of choice, then head over to the website for the show notes and more Fantasy Football Origin Stories. That's at fantasyfootballoriginstories.com. And remember, dudes, where we're going, we don't need roads. Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude. And I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you got to do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you got to do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.